Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt and the show is brought to you by the continuously improving huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. Huntrealestate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, New York, and also all through upstate New York, and also through our links to Boston, Massachusetts, and Phoenix, Arizona. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, NMLS number 37405. Hunt Mortgage is a proud equal opportunity lender. Call them today, 633-3700, and ask one of our very skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs, wants. It's never been more important than now, certainly in recent history. And there's a whole selection of new products that you can choose from, including many of our exclusive programs, such as the pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. And in today's very competitive residential real estate market, still, there is a shortage of listings. So when you find the one you want, you want to make sure that your offer is as strong as possible when there's often more than one offer. And I just heard this week, at several of our offices, we're still seeing multiple offers. So from a seller's perspective, cash is going to be very persuasive. When you're working with a skilled Hunt sales professional armed with your pre-purchase commitment, your offer is the equivalent of cash, and don't let anyone tell you otherwise. And you may find yourself now in a house that was right for you when you bought it years ago, but you've outgrown it, or maybe it's outgrown you. In any case, it no longer meets your lifestyle. But where are you going to go, even if you were to sell at a great price? Hunt Mortgage and Hunt Real Estate have combined to solve that problem through the Golden Gate, the bridge to your next home. We've combined a bridge loan and a guaranteed sale on your present home to get you out looking for that right house for you right now. So learn more about any of our unique programs. Call the Hunt Mortgage hotline today, 716-633-3700, for personalized, customized service that will knock your socks off. Hunt is the official real estate and relocation provider of our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills and the Buffalo Sabres. And we're also proud supporters of our Bisons, and we're looking forward to seeing them again in the spring. We are broadcast live on WBN 930 AM and 98.5 FM HD3. You can listen live anywhere in the world through the Odyssey app or at WBN.com. And for those of you who would like to participate in today's show, you can text us or call us in the studio at 716-803-0930. Those are all free calls. Join us on the air at Our House. We have a very special show for you today. It's been a while since I've had my guest on, exactly 18 months to be precise. My guest in the studio with me today is Jerry Jacobs, Jr., the co-CEO of Delaware North Companies. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, Peter.
It's good to have you here. Jerry, you know, it's your company is well-known, and certainly the Jacobs family name is well-known here in our community, but it's always good to kind of refresh our listeners a little bit about your history and the history of the company. Tell us a little bit about how Delaware North got started and how you wound up in the chair they're in.
Yeah. So Delaware North is, and I'm sure people have heard, but we're a 100-year-old company based here in Buffalo, founded here in Buffalo by my grandfather and his two brothers. It's funny, I was just telling a story the other day about Grandpa when he was a little boy, I think he was just going to high school. And my his two older brothers had landed a concession contract in one of the downtown theaters. And I remind everybody, Buffalo in this era, it was early 1900s, it was one of the wealthiest cities in America. And Grandpa wasn't old enough to work in that theater because the content of that theater was not.
Can imagine. I'll guess at his name, but
yeah. So they said, "Come in. Come into the commissary before the show starts. We'll hide you. And when the lights go down, we're going to give you a tray. You go up into the balcony, and you can serve food up there, or actually sell candy." And so Grandpa did that. He went in. It was dark. He went up into the balcony, and he fell, and spilled his whole tray of candy. Started to cry. And the patrons all got around him, felt bad for him, and they said to help him get his candy together. They bought the whole tray. So he went down and told his brothers what had happened. His brothers said, "Look, go home, and tomorrow come back and do that again." So, that's really how the business started. It was three brothers that were getting, you know, just hustling for work and for business, selling peanuts and popcorn outside of theaters and arenas, and then they landed a contract at Detroit Baseball. Was their first major contract. The first real big contract they got actually was the boats at Hoyt Lake.
Really?
That was the first big one for them. But the business grew over the years. In 1968, the two older brothers were dead, and my grandfather passed away at his desk, and Dad took over.
How old was your dad at that time?
He's 28 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. So the business, I think, at the time was about $50 million in revenue. So you can imagine it's quite a jump between that and where we are today. Dad and his brothers bought out their sisters, and then Dad bought out his brothers, and so the company is wholly owned by his family today. And so, and then my brothers and I all went to work for him, and I like to say it was one of the smartest decisions he ever made. So.
But to have you sons,
but we've been in all sorts of ways. It's really funny. I was explaining. We've been in aluminum smelting, typography. We were in shipping. We've been in all over the board in terms of businesses we're in. And only in the last few decades have we really consolidated around hospitality and entertainment. And it's been really a very, very successful formula for us. So today we're in casinos, concessions, you know, sports concessions, those very modestly priced hot dogs and the like. We're in airport concessions, and we have a parks and resorts business. Of course, we own the Boston Garden, the Boston Bruins, and then we do it internationally as well. So,
well, that's a huge evolution. It's not easy for a lot of people to think about your grandfather stumbling and falling and picking that up, and then selling. You know, having the sympathy of the people in the theater there, and then turning that around into the organization that you have today. You came into the business how long ago?
I've been there for about 33 years now.
Yeah. And at that point, how big was the company when you came in?
We were about 600 or 700 million at the time. I remember when we crossed the threshold into the $1 billion mark, and my dad was interviewed by the Buffalo News, and they asked him, you know, how do you think the second billion will be? And he said, a lot easier than the first. And he was absolutely right. So,
you know, it's interesting. I've had a chance to watch what your company has done, other companies, successful companies. There aren't that many that are homegrown here in Buffalo, and it's been a really astounding story. The story about the Bruins, I might ask you to tell a little later, because that's a great story too. But let's shift gears if we can. You've also, your company has done several exploratory studies of various aspects of our society. The first one, I believe, was on medicine. Mm-hmm. The second one was on sports. And I guess you did two versions of the sports.
The future of, yeah. Yeah.
And now that you have them on.
Future of travel.
Immigration, travel, and hospitality. I've only read through part of this one, but I read through the others not recently, but it's very interesting. Why do you do that kind of thing? Why do you do that kind of research?
Well, it started, I was at a conference, and I'll admit it was in Aspen during the summertime, so I wasn't really there for the conference. But it was an expense, right? So, but I was listening to, they had brought in a futurist The first time I'd ever heard a futurist talk from Singularity University. And he started to talk about all these crazy things that we could never happen, like, you know, electronic currency, electric cars, you know, just going down this list of things that I thought, wow, this is really cool, but this is just not going to happen. And then, of course, it all happened very quickly. And I was telling my dad about that. And he said, you know, look, he said, that's all great, but I want to know what that means for our business. What does that mean to us? I want you to go out and commission a report and get a team together, get some futurists, and talk about, you know, what's going to happen in our industries in the future. How does this all affect it? And we really talked that through in terms of, okay, is this proprietary? Is this for us? Is this for the industry? Are we trying to create a dialogue? And we really felt we needed to create the dialogue, that we wouldn't be able to understand it fully on our own. We needed to actually share this information with our competitors and with our partners and with our suppliers and really get a picture of where things were headed and what was happening. And so that's how it sort of evolved into this.
But you started with medicine. How does that dovetail into your business?
Well, you know, Dad's brother, my Uncle Larry, was a brilliant researcher, scientist, doctor, with an amazing bedside manner. And died 61 years old.
I mean, it's just tragic.
Yeah, it was to this day, Dad still says I still misses him terribly. Mm-hmm. And he just wanted to honor his brother's legacy, and he wanted to, make sure that, as he said, I remember at the funeral, my dad speaking, saying, "I'm not going to allow his genius to be buried in that box." And so he wanted to perpetuate the start of the Jacobs Institute, and now it's the JI. It's really a collaborative, sort of interactive sort of environment where researchers can take their game to another level. And he wanted to resource that. And so when it came time to think about the future, he's like, "Well, I want to help these guys really understand where things are going." And I'll tell you the really, really scary part about it. One of the key predictions of this report.
The pandemic.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I wish I'd read it.
I glanced over that. Yeah. It's pretty amazing, actually.
Yeah. So it was, it's definitely, these are definitely worth paying attention to. And we continue to share them with anyone that will read them.
Well, let's I ask your assistant about that this weekend. I got delivery of all of them again, which was great. So I've been pawing through.
You got the full set.
I got the full set, which is great. But that prediction that's in the first study obviously came true earlier than you predicted, by the way, much earlier. But that was a series of events that really your industry was probably most affected of all industries in the country. So what happened and how have you come out of all that?
Well, so I like to say we were at the tip of the spear on that. Every one of our businesses, when pre-pandemic, we had about 48,000 people on the payroll. And at the peak of the pandemic, we had 900. And I'm talking between Australia, India, you know, New Zealand, UK, US, 900 people. Every arm of our business was completely shut down except for airports, which were running at 10% of 2019 levels. So it was an existential sort of experience. It was, I like to say we sort of oscillated back and forth between, extreme depression and hyper activity and invention. We went from playing checkers to three-dimensional chess. And It was a tough time, but that story about my grandpa falling and how his brothers immediately turned crisis into opportunity is sort of the reason I tell it is because it's a great way of introducing the culture of our company and the people that work there. And so during pandemic, we could have just folded up our tents and said this is it, we're done. But instead, we said, this is going to come back, and we have a business. We were in the process of transitioning our business into a new model. Let's just do it now. I'll tell you another example. During this year, we had terrible rains outside of Yellowstone, and it wiped out the northern entrance. I mean, literally just washed out the entrance. And we had a brand new property there that, with lodging and cabins that we were about to open. And it ended up being an island. Like the river literally just went around either side and just it was not accessible. And the roads were wiped out. And instead of just not opening, we said, okay, well, we still had plans that we were going to do next year and the year after that for renovations. Let's just do them now. And so moving in that reinvention space, moving forward and leaning into crisis is really what got us through it. You know, we had no help from the federal government. We didn't qualify for any assistance. We were on our own, you know, and we knew that. And once you accept that, then you work the problem, right? We work mm-hmm. the problem every day. I remember saying to our CFO, I need a plan. And he just looked at me and I said, no, I know it's going to be wrong, but I need a plan and I need a budget. And so we put together a budget. We met every week. At the end of the week, we'd go through the budget. And every week, we revised it down. It got worse every week for 3 months. But then the day came when it started going the other way. And we were ready for it. So it's just it was a really tough time. It's the ultimate in zero-based budgeting. I don't think you get any lower than that. And then it's been a process of rebuilding the business.
So you had 48,000 the day before you were shut down. Mm-hmm. How long did it take to come back, and what did you come back to? You talked about a new model.
Yeah, I'd say it was probably about 8 months of real crisis for us. And then we started to see the advantage we have is not only are we diversified in the different businesses we're in, but we're geographically diverse. And so, you know, we Arkansas, for example, which has one of our largest properties, came back sooner than New York State, Massachusetts. They just it's almost like they didn't want to reopen. Mm-hmm. The other states did. We were very big in Florida, for example. And so our businesses started to track back online to the extent that we had cash flow to help get through this, because you know how it works is we notify our banks that we're going to be out of covenant, our business is completely shut down. You know, they take we love you, we want to help you. So the first thing we got to do is we got to raise your interest rates, right? So, you know, so we were paying like $400,000 a week in penalty interest, so it was really very difficult to overcome sort of this wet blanket that had been thrown on top of us. But, you know, as the business started to reemerge, we said, okay, look, we have been talking for years about going cashless in our sports business. You know, when people go to a baseball park, an arena, let's go cashless. Let's take cash out of the system. You eliminate the money room. You take 45 minutes out of every person in the building's hours, because before they had to count their bank, they had to reconcile their bank at the end of the night. You know, it was time spent counting money, and you know, when you're counting money, sometimes money tends to walk. And so, you know, you eliminated shrink, reduced hours, you know, reduced working capital, and surprise, surprise, customer satisfaction went up, and per capita's increased a good 18% to 20%. So, it was the right move. It was a move that pre-pandemic we would have been a little more cautious about executing. In pandemic, we said, we got to make change now. And it's got to be, you know, it's got to be impactful. And, you know, it did.
So that's part of the new model, going cashless. Other things that I've seen in the airports that you operate are, for example, there's no waiter or waitress. You just look at a screen. Yeah. How's that impacted things?
Well, it's a process of learning. So what you're doing is you're trying to not eliminate labor, but you're trying to address the issue that you don't have labor to do this work. And so when you go to a kiosk and self-order kiosk, what we've learned is one of the most important things. We call it the run a show. You have to engage the customer in a way that it's natural for them to be able to figure out the transaction. And if you get it wrong, you really frustrate people and they just walk away. And so it's more than just putting up kiosks. It's figuring out the psychology of your customer and how to position the offerings in a way that they can actually transact and feel good about it. Once you get there, it's highly impactful, highly effective, and people are very. But Peter, there's more. We opened Climate Pledge Arena this year out in Seattle. At Climate Pledge, we have a couple of Amazon shops which are just walkout. You know, you set up your credit. You go and you take what you want and you walk out, and your credit card is charged. We had
It's in the stadium?
In the stadium.
Wow.
Yeah. We have a couple of them. Store there where it's a series of food concepts. You get a tray, you get your food, and you go swipe just like at the grocery store. Swipe yourself out, use your credit card, and out you go. We purposely went and got the technology that's used locally in the local grocery stores. And so people just adapted mm-hmm. it very, very quickly. And so this is happening faster and faster and faster. And it does move the needle for our business. It does significantly improve our margins.
Two things. Number one, technology is designed to do that. It's supposed to improve productivity. It doesn't necessarily, people might cynically say, well, you get rid of labor. Well, those people do other things. They don't go away. And we deploy them differently in society. And the other thing that strikes me as you're talking about this is kind of how it's democratized things.
Yeah.
Because and your recent study deals with that a little bit in terms of how the shifting to the younger generations, they adapt more rapidly to this kind of thing, number one. Yeah. But number two, it has the capacity of making things more efficient for them. And if it's more efficient, they're going to do more of it.
Yeah, one of the surprises, I always had this notion that service involved a human touch. And so I was surprised that when we went to kiosk and went to self-serve and the like, that customer satisfaction actually went up. People felt they could do their transaction faster. It was more accurate. They were more comfortable. So that I didn't see that. That caught me off guard. In that Future Of report, one of the things that really gets me is that the Gen Zs who have grown up their entire life with social media, with technology, and who, when you and I think of authentic, when we think of an experience, we think of, the wind, the smell, the experience of being at a ballpark or climbing a mountain or whatever it is. In their generation, they're perfectly comfortable with doing that virtually. Their idea of authenticity is knowing who's making the profit on this. Who's behind? Where do the ingredients come from? Are they organic? Right. That's their notion of authentic. Very different from ours. And when you think about our business, which is very much in the moment experience, it gets a little unnerving, right? Where is this all going? Is gaming going to be online?
Well, that's already happening.
It is, it's becoming more and more popular.
And that's an obvious question when you have this proliferation of online gaming, which are giving away money at some of these new sites, but that's to get you hooked, obviously. How is that
affecting? We don't use the word hooked, Peter.
Well, first of all, are you involved in that? No. Number two, how has it affected your gaming business?
So the gaming, it's our belief that first of all, what you're talking about are the sports betting, yep. Which is not a business we're really bullish on, and we think that the expense that people are putting out to procure, to buy, participants is outrageous. You mm-hmm. can't; it's not sustainable. Our view is that people still want to be around people, mm-hmm. and that we have internet gaming offerings. But it's really meant to augment and support the bricks and mortar business where somebody's a patron of one of our properties can game at home, or they can come to the property, they earn points, and they can enjoy the environment. But it's our belief that people still want to get out of the house. Right now, I expect that's going to happen in the workforce too. Right now, everyone's really loving working from home, but they've really shrunk their world. And one of these days, very soon, they're going to want to get out. And we've seen it in our ballparks. It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. The teams don't have to play well. People just want to get out. They want to do something. And mm-hmm. so we think that's true with the gaming business as well.
And I'm going to ask you about how it's affected live sports, too, in terms of advertising dollars and attendance in the stadiums, because mm-hmm. I think it's very important. We do have to go to a break.
Sure.
But I appreciate what you're saying about people want to be around people, because that's one of the things that one of our people texting in is talking about in terms of not just people going back to work, but people wanting to work. And I want your comments on that because it's really important in today's society. We'll be right back with more from Our House Cheers after these important messages.
Buying a home can be challenging, especially if you need to sell your current house first. Hunt Mortgage and Hunt Real Estate are here to help with the Golden Gate, the bridge to your next home. This innovative program features a bridge loan from Hunt Mortgage along with a guaranteed sale of your current home when you partner with a Hunt Real Estate sales professional. Visit huntmortgage.com/Golden Gate for more details. The Golden Gate from Hunt Mortgage and Hunt Real Estate. Your equity when you want it, your home sold guaranteed. Terms and conditions apply. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, NMLS 37405, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the continuously improving huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. Huntrealestate.com is the only place on the web where you can find not only a complete inventory of homes available in any of the markets we serve, but you're also going to find access to a complete set of homeownership services at huntrealestate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. And for more information about our exclusive program that is your assurance of the lowest rate and closing costs, the Second Look program, call today, 716-633-3700, and ask for details. If you watch television at all, turn your computer on, turn your phone on, you're inundated with mortgage offerings, and it's going to get worse now because of the conditions in the mortgage financing world. But the target is really to refinance your current program, which if you've got a more, if you refinanced among the 5 million people that did in 2021, it's highly unlikely that you're going to refinance your home. But in any event, you're going to want to make sure that you're getting the very best deal. Well, let us take a second look through Hunt Mortgage's Second Look program. There's no risk or cost, and we're so convinced this will help you, you're going to get a gift certificate just for allowing us to take that second look at whatever you receive from any other lender. Also ask about our pre-purchase commitment, our Golden Gate, the bridge to your next home, only at Hunt Mortgage, 716-633-3700. We're live in the studio this morning with Jerry Jacobs Jr., the co-CEO of Delaware North, and we've been talking about, first of all, his organization, which is extensive. If you were listening, you heard that. But also, perhaps more importantly, the impact of the shift in society to remote work, work from home, and how that's impacting the kind of venues that the Delaware North organization leads. You touched a little bit on this, but just before the break, I just mentioned what someone had texted. I'm going to read the text. Mr. Jacobs, could you give me your opinion of where our country is headed financially in a time when it seems no one wants to work? A little hot potato for you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to dance around the politics of that one, but mm-hmm. Here's... It's a diverse topic, right? So, I think one of the first questions we had is where'd everyone go? I mean, we turn the lights back on and nobody's coming back to work. So, I mean, where are they working? Because we're at full employment. There's all sorts of new jobs that emerged during the pandemic, right? There are jobs where people like delivery and the like, where people can set their own hours. They have flexibility. Mm-hmm. And they enjoy those jobs a lot more than saying I got to be, at the airport at 6 a.m. to open a concession stand, right? So we're up against that, and obviously that's a tough one to overcome. It's also become an environment where, because it's full employment, people are jumping from one job to the next, particularly if they're at home and it's click. You just click jobs. You just mm-hmm. change with a. And so we have a very high turnover rate. We land people and then we lose them. On the other side, we have a full inventory of hotel rooms and lodging properties in very interesting, fun places to live. And people can now work remotely. So we're sort of pushing into that market as well. Come work from our, come work from Yosemite, outside of Yosemite or... come work from outside of Yellowstone. I mean, Bozeman, Montana has become a Zoom town, as they call it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be a Zoom town once those people live through their first winter, but people are now deciding they don't have to decide where they're going to live if based on where they're going to work. And so that changes the dynamic in our business that advantages us, and then it makes it also much harder for us to land and keep people. I think we're getting there. I mean, our company is a fun place to work. And the culture of the business is not, it's about, the pride of the Jersey and being a part of something that's exciting. And you know, we have a lot of that type of work in our company. So we'll get there. It's just not easy. It's not in a full employment environment. But
in classic urban studies, one of the precepts is that a vibrant community has just what you said we don't need anymore. It's a live where you work environment. The greatest urban centers are urban centers where people actually live, so they can maybe walk to work, or the concept of a walkable community.
Right.
So how do you think that dovetails into our current kind of hybrid work environment now?
It's that's exactly what's happening, right? I mean, I think people are choosing to live in that East Aurora. You know, it's a Norman Rockwell town, right? It's a great place to live. If you can work from there and live there and you know, and got an open container law on a Friday evening, you can walk around with a beer in your hand. I mean, it's a great place, right? And who wouldn't want to live that way? The thing that gets me, the thing that from where I sit that I worry about, is how do we mentor? How do we transfer culture? How do we, you know, how do we bring people along in our business, in our organization? Yeah, you can do the job, but can you get promoted? Can we see a career path for you when you're not here? I think we are starting to figure some of that out, and I think that's a cultural shift for us too, something we have to learn. But it's not easy. You know, we've actually hired people, executives remotely, you know, without ever shaking their hand. And then, you know, after they've worked for us for 6 months, all of a sudden they're in the office and we're shaking their hand for the first time. It's a really bizarre circumstance.
Well, it is, and I think it's happening all over the economy right now. One of the things that strikes me is that there is a direct parallel direct relationship between the work at home environment and the decrease in productivity in the entire society right now. And I think of all the things that we're faced with here in the United States today, that's perhaps the most dangerous. Because if we've got full employment, like you say, and people can jump from job to job, and yet productivity is going down, what does that mean for our economy overall?
Well, you know, first of all, it's highly inflationary. Right. It takes a lot more labor and a lot more cost to produce the same.
Exactly right.
And we're experiencing that, right? I mean, the whole, you know, between labor. Western New York, our company, labor rates went up about 22% in the last 8 months. It's just it's highly inflationary. It's hard to keep up. And then, you know, I just don't know how, I don't know where it ends, right? This can spiral very quickly and very easily, and it's something to be concerned about. So, but I do think we're going to figure it out. You know, the economy is like this organic sort of thing. That so long as you know it's not messed with too much by legislature, it will figure itself out and find that equilibrium. And so we just have to give it time. I think it's going to take time, and we got to be able to be adaptable and you know, while we wait.
Our industry has faced a lot of the same things. We have 58 different facilities for our people to go into, and oftentimes I can go in there and it's me and a couple other people. That's in 10,000 square feet. It's not exactly efficient at all. But we're involved in long-term leases, and we've got buildings here and there, and it's a very complex thing. And you used the word culture a couple times in this discussion. And to me, that's really the key word in this whole discussion. And you've alluded to the fact that, like, you didn't know never met somebody for 6 months, and all of a sudden they walk into the office, and who are you? Mm. You know, it's a very interesting dilemma, I think, that we face it as a culture for the entire country. And I'm not sure where it goes. I think you're addressing something here that we've got to address in time, because you tie that with an inflationary environment frankly, some of the other issues we're facing as a society. And it seems to me that hopefully, company by company, we can create a new culture, I guess. I'm not sure what that looks like.
Yeah, I think I can tell you where we're focused, all right? I mean, before pandemic even, we were offshoring. We don't need our accounts payable in the office. We don't need that resolved here. You know, we can offshore that, and that's not a big deal. So what is it that's impactful to your business? And this is really forces you to say, okay, what is it that's really moving the needle for my business? And then the rest of this stuff that has to be done, and it has to be done right, but doesn't necessarily have to be done here. And we have to really parse that out very clearly. And until now, we haven't really been forced to, right? It's been convenient. Delaware North was busting at the seams pre-pandemic. We were in three office spaces. We're now in one. Right, and our associates are coming in generally about 3 days a week. You know, on Fridays you could shoot a cannon off in the hallways of our offices, and there's nobody around. But the work is getting done, and we're holding, you know, the supervisors and the VPs accountable for it. Get the work done. If it's not getting done, then what you're doing isn't working, and that's the real focus. So what's moving the needle? And what is impactful, and what needs to be here or benefits from being here? We can't, you know, a manager of a baseball park can't sit at home and do it on Zoom. He's got to be, or she's got to be, at the ballpark. Mm-hmm. So there's still elements of the job that absolutely mandate your being there. And then there's a gray area that is, you know, okay, do I have to be there, you know, 5-7 days a week? Can I be there 3 days a week? How does that work? And the pressure's there now to figure that out. It wasn't there before. And we will figure it out. That's what I mean. We're going to find a way. Yeah.
What serves me a little bit is the fact that the negative side of this impacts some of our lowest paid people, the weaker people in society, the most impacted by the downturn in the economy. It's people that, like a nurse that has to go to the hospital. You can't nurse someone by Zoom.
Right.
And there, you can do a medical consultation, I suppose, by telemedicine, which I think is very efficient. But the actual hands-on, the bedside manner you referred to in your uncle, mm-hmm. that doesn't happen by Zoom.
And there's a real shortage, right, in the nurse and medical community. There's a real shortage of skilled labor, and it's a real problem.
Well, think about the stresses that they went through during the pandemic. We had a guest on the show works with us in Boston. His wife was a nurse, and I interviewed him. I just happened to bump into him and talk to him, and he said, my wife is a nurse. She had to come home every day, undress in the mudroom, immediately get in the shower, immediately wash the clothes, because nobody knew what was going on. No one knew the impact of all that. But think about that added level of stress to every single day. And the rest of us are sitting around at home, you know, waiting for something to happen, you know, watching our computers.
Or in my case, I was sleeping under my desk, but yeah.
We have to go to another break. We'll be right back with more from Our House to Yours with Jerry Jacobs after these messages.
Buying a home can be challenging, especially if you need to sell your current house first. Hunt Mortgage and Hunt Real Estate are here to help with the Golden Gate, the bridge to your next home. This innovative program features a bridge loan from Hunt Mortgage along with a guaranteed sale of your current home when you partner with a Hunt Real Estate sales professional. Visit huntmortgage.com/Golden Gate for more details. The Golden Gate from Hunt Mortgage and Hunt Real Estate. Your equity when you want it, your home sold guaranteed. Terms and conditions apply. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, NMLS 37405, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the continuously improving huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, home of the low rate and closing cost commitment, the pre-purchase commitment, and the Golden Gate, the bridge to your next home, among other special programs. Call today, 716-633-3700. I'm live in the studio today with Jerry Jacobs, Jr., the co-CEO of Delaware North Companies. We've been having a wide-ranging discussion about the conditions in the society today and how his company is adapting to it, and by inference, how the rest of us are adapting to this whole thing. If you have any questions or comments, please text us here in the studio, 716-803-0930, or give us a call. We're live in the studio today. Before we get any further, I just want to wish my Aunt Nancy Hunt her 95th birthday, which is today. Happy birthday to my Aunt Nancy, and it was great to see her last night. It's amazing. She looks like she's about, you know, probably my age, which is great.
Well, Peter, that's pretty old.
I know it's really, really old, but somehow we'll survive. Anyway, one of the things that this your study refers to many things, and I was pawing through it last night. One of the things that you talk about, or your authors talk about, is aligning lifestyle, travel, and purchasing decisions. What does that mean from your chair in that company?
So, as we talked about where people work and play, but there's the priorities have shifted, right? When we graduated, well, I graduated. I'm not sure if you actually graduated, but when I graduated from college,
there's a certificate on my wall.
I applied for a job, and it said, "Okay, it was Payne Weber. Doesn't exist anymore. Going back a few years, it's in New York." So I went to New York for my job. Now, when my kids went to look for their job, they said, "Where do I want to live?" And then they found the job. And it was a complete shift in terms of the priorities and the balance of where and what drives people's decisions. If somebody, and we're seeing this merging more and more, take, for example, the hot button these days, abortion. And depending on a region's position, the politics of that region, people are deciding whether or not to go live there or not. These sorts of things were not part of the process with our generation, but with the next generations, it absolutely is. Their view isn't just the job; it's the lifestyle, it's the values, and whether the values are reflected. Their values are reflected in the community they're going to. So there's a pretty dramatic shift in the way people are processing their decisions right now.
It also has a lot to do with demographics, age. Like you say, you pointed out how your children, my children, to some extent, the same thing. They align that lifestyle first, and then they say, what kind of job will be available, or is there a job available in the kind of industry I want to be in that environment? Another thing that's cited in your study is the movement away from what they describe as take, make, and waste to sustainability. Mm-hmm. How do you even measure that?
Well, you start with the zero landfill priorities or the carbon footprint issues that are the metrics that you can use to bear out. When I talked about earlier about authenticity and Gen Z, that's what they're looking for. They want to know, what is your environmental impact? You know, how and what are you doing to mitigate? They're less that's more of a priority than whether or not the team won today, right? So It's a whole shift in priorities and dynamics that fortunately for us, because we were in the parks business and because we're semi tree huggers to begin with, we were already well down that road. But this is going to affect every business. I can tell you another one, dog racing. You know, it's something that's it's I think we have one of the last properties in the country that actually has dog racing. And that's a problem, right? We have to figure out what we do and how we navigate that issue because—
Is it about the animals themselves?
It's about the animals. It's about how they were treated, at least historically, how they've been treated. And
there was a big movement several years ago about rescuing these dogs.
Oh, and we've had so many of them. I mean, they've ripped around our property. Oh, they're beautiful animals.
They really are.
They're sweet, sweet, sweet animals. And
I used to go to the dog track with my grandfather down in Florida. It was a mystery to me, but he loved it.
Yeah.
He'd hand me a small amount of money to bet, and I'd quickly lose it and sit there with my arms crossed waiting for him to want to go home. But anyway, this ESG thing that you touched on, they talk in your study about environmental repair and social change. Mm-hmm. How does one company or anybody really address that? Or is it an entire societal challenge that we have to kind of glom onto as a whole?
Well, I'm going to take a twist out of their book, and I'll tell you my view on it, which is that there's a great book, and I can't remember the name of the author. It's called Connectography. And the essence of it is that borders, governmental, like nations' borders and governments are sort of arbitrary. Mm-hmm. And that what That's really true. Is steering change in the world are major metropolitan centers, like you talked about earlier, major cities, major corporations, and the like. So So how can a corporation, we can't address gun control in our country, right? It's just not, is you can't, if you're a politician, don't touch it. It's, but.
Your cousin.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
Right there. But if you're a major corporation, you can say, look, we're going to put restrictions on, we're not selling bump stocks. We're going to put restrictions on how much ammunition somebody can buy or what kind of, you know, they actually go ahead and do it. Mm-hmm. They get it done.
Or just stop selling guns.
Mm-hmm. You know, or the like. I mean, on many fronts, you know. Mm-hmm.
But it's an individual company decision, which is really where the rubber hits the road.
Right.
Legislation can tell you where the impact is.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, and these are big companies that can really move the needle and do it very quietly, mm-hmm. right? They don't make a big splash. They just do what's right.
So that's the real, I guess, the definition of ESG. It's what the individual company does relative to their own set of values, like you were discussing earlier.
And it's that transparency. It's that generation says, I want to know what your priorities are. I want to see how it manifests in your organization. Show me what you're doing mm-hmm. to make that happen. There's a whole level of accountability that's coming. And it's that generation that's going to really drive down into it.
And it impacts what you were talking about earlier, just the word fun, for example. How do people define fun today? And a lot of it's values-based. You know, they want to do things that, you know, maybe we would consider fun but way back when. But I think there is a sort of a new definition of fun. There's so much in these studies, but it seems to me like a lot of companies kind of wear this on their sleeve. They make a big deal out of it to make some kind of public statement and make people feel good about them, when really they're alienating a lot of people in the process. Do you take the trouble or do you take the time to go out and say, these are what our values are? Is it in your corporate documents, et cetera?
It is, but that word manifest is real important. How does it manifest itself in your organization? You have to be able to point to where it's actually happening mm-hmm. and show evidence that you're doing this. You know, there's a lot of things that are said to sound good or right, and then it's empty. After mm-hmm. the incident at the Tops and on the east side, we put a piece out in the Buffalo News saying we're not just going to write checks anymore. We're gonna step up and start doing. We're gonna start helping. And every month we put another advertisement in there and just talk about where that commitment has manifested itself in our organization. Mm-hmm. And so you know the market, they had the fire and shut down the restaurants. We just did a function at the arena to help, you know, those restaurateurs, you know, recoup their money. It's not going to fix it, but it's going to help, right? So do what we can, but not just by writing a check, mm-hmm. but by stepping up and actually helping, mm-hmm. right? Actually doing.
Speaking of which, unfortunately, many of these instances happen in the poorest parts of cities across the country. They don't happen. I mean, there's been obviously suburban and better section incidents. What happened to Paul Pelosi, for example? These are not isolated events to only the bad parts of town. But one of the things that obviously we're in the real estate business, and our mission on this show is to help people protect and enhance their investment in real estate. But it's disproportional. It doesn't happen across the board. Perfectly evenly. And one of the things that, to your point about actually manifesting some kind of philosophy in a community, we're trying to do the same thing. And real estate is one of the hardest things to really impact, particularly when you're in a rising interest rate market. How do you see where people live is critical, obviously, and how they live? And one of the things that we look at is the home ownership rate in the communities, just like you're talking about here. How do you see that kind of democratization taking place, or don't you? In other words, how would a company like yours help people in your company that might be trying to get their first home, or other companies that are trying to make an impact by the placement of their business in a community that needs real help?
So a great example is in West Memphis, Arkansas. We have a very large casino operation. And through our funds, through our resources, we've helped to build a community center, a medical center, so that services can be, so that people can access the services that they need, desperately need for the community. We look at it more like a fabric issue. What are you doing to improve the fabric of the community to make it so that it can sustain itself? Writing a check to solve a problem is important, particularly when there's a crisis, but the bigger impact comes when you start to move the fabric so that the community can build on itself. And they no longer need you. That's the end goal, right? That's the game. Mm-hmm. And so where can you invest your money to really make a difference in the fabric of the community that makes it stronger and better able to help itself and sustain itself?
So how do you do that in that one?
Schools, mm-hmm. medical campuses, medical services. After school services, Boys and Girls Clubs and YMCA and the like. These things help the community become stronger and giving teaching options for particularly youth that don't see a lot of options. So that's where we think it's best to place our energies.
We'll take one call right now. This is Timothy. I'm sorry. We won't take a call, but there is a comment here. Perfect example of corporate action that backfired. Dick's Sporting Goods stopped selling firearms. They lost all the sportsman clothing purchases, and that company was built on hunting and fishing, and now they don't carry it. How do you feel about a statement like that?
Well, that's right. I mean, that's the risk in it, right? But did they do the wrong thing, or did they do it the wrong way? I would challenge that. They should have had a better strategy on how to execute that. Absolutely. In a way to say, we don't want to lose this customer, so how are we going to do this without losing them entirely? And that's not easy. That's why these guys get paid, right? So, but there is a way. There's always a way, and there's always maybe there's a middle ground. Maybe you don't move entirely over, but you move partly. Maybe there's other options. I can't even think. I don't know Dick's that well, but mm-hmm. but that's what we face every day, right? That's what I talk about, the three-dimensional chess. We went from checkers to three-dimensional chess. It's not an easy game, mm-hmm. and it's a lot of let's work the problem and then let's come back and work it again tomorrow, because we're probably going to figure something out overnight while we're sleeping. And so these things are not easy, but that's where the change can happen fastest and easiest, as in the corporate.
45 seconds. What's the next chapter for Delaware North?
I think that we're going to continue to grow in the gaming and the lodging sector. Our sports business will continue to thrive, but there's only so big you can get when we've got 11 major league ballparks. I mean, there's only so many we can get. Airports are going to continue to sort of plod along, but our biggest growth is going to be between gaming and lodging, I would say.
And quickly, airports, it seems like there's fewer flights, places are jammed. Is that a benefit to you, or do you see the airlines themselves returning to the kind of traffic we had before?
Well, places are jammed. Airports are not. There's not as many flights as there were before. They don't have the pilots. And I can tell you, when we hire somebody for our business in airports, we hire them, they accept the job. Now we got to get them badged, right? TSA could take 2 weeks, could take 4 weeks. By the time they get their badge to come on property, they're working somewhere else.
I hate to interrupt you on a note like that, but we do have to go.
All right.
Jerry Jacobs, Jr., co-CEO of Delaware North, thanks very much for being with us today.
It's a pleasure.
I'd like to thank our listeners. We'll be back again at the same time next week. And remember, when it comes to real estate, all of upstate is Hunt Country.
WBEN Buffalo, WKSE3, HD3 Niagara Falls.
Always live on the free Odyssey app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.